Good afternoon, and welcome to the Green Thumb Show. I'm Lee Murray, your reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona. Thanks for joining us. For BetterHomesAndGardens.com, 12 fall lawn care chores to check off your list now. Tackle these lawn care tasks now to enjoy healthier, greener, lusher grass when spring rolls around again, by Megan Hughes. Intentional fall lawn care is key for producing a landscape with lush, vibrant green grass come spring. Homeowners with trees are accustomed to raking leaves during the season, but cool autumn conditions are also great for fertilizing, controlling weeds, and other yard maintenance steps. For a dense, expansive grass next year, consider a few fall lawn care tips that will set your yard up for success in spring. First, adjust your mowing height. If you raise the height of your lawn mower in summer to reduce heat stress to your grass, return the mower deck to its normal height in fall. Cutting your lawn slightly shorter in autumn helps prevent the grass from matting under leaves and snow. However, avoid cutting the grass too short. Tightly clipped turf has fewer roots and allows weeds to get a foothold. And here's a tip. A mower deck height of about 3 inches is best for most grasses during fall. Second, give your grass plenty of water. If a summer drought persists into autumn, water your turf deeply a few times before frost sets in. Adding a couple of generous soaks to your fall lawn care agenda will help your landscape transition to winter before the soil freezes. Nature will sometimes provide moisture for you via rain, but if you have to water your lawn, do so in the morning when the winds are lighter. This will limit evaporation and allow your soil to retain most of the moisture. Third, apply fertilizer. Fall is the best time to fertilize your lawn if you live in the north. Cool season grasses such as bluegrass, fescue, and ryegrass respond well to feeding in early September and late fall, end of October or November. Incorporating fertilization in your fall lawn care routine will help your grass turn vibrant green earlier and look more lush in spring. Conversely, avoid fertilizing dormant warm season grasses in the south unless they've been overseeded with winter ryegrass. Fourth, repair dead patches. Early fall lawn care should include reseeding dead or thin patches in cool season lawns. A mulch product embedded with seed and fertilizer is a convenient way to fill sparse patches. Prepare the soil bed with a rake before seeding, and encourage quick germination by watering the new seed regularly for a couple of weeks after application. And here's a tip. If you seed in autumn, you'll have fewer weeds the following year. Fall seeding also ensures the seedlings can establish themselves before stressful hot weather conditions arrive in the summer. Fifth, lay sod. Fall is an excellent time to start a new cool season lawn or patch existing turf with sod because moderate temperatures and abundant moisture help sod get off to a quick start. High-quality sod will be thick, dense, and weed-free. It's a convenient way to get an instant solution to bare spots. And a tip, if conditions turn dry, be prepared to water new sod daily. 6. Check for thatch. Thatch is a layer of dead organic matter near the soil surface. A thick thatch layer leads to disease and insect problems, and the lawn ailment can also make your grass vulnerable to damage from drought and cold weather. Thatch may develop when you over-fertilize your lawn or water too frequently. Check for thatch by turning over a small section of turf with a spade. 1 inch or less of thatch is not a problem, but if there's more than that, your lawn will benefit from removing some. Number 7, remove excess thatch. Dethatching involves cutting through the thatch layer and ripping out the debris. Power rakes or vertical mowers are effective tools for this and can be rented from hardware stores and tool libraries. Use a hand rake to remove the thatch from the lawn after it's been pulled out by one of those machines, then compost the debris. And a warning, power raking and vertical mowing can damage grasses spread by surface runners like centipede grass and St. Augustine grass. Use a machine that has correctly spaced knives for these grasses. Number 8. Aerate. Aeration is a fall lawn care step that reduces thatch, improves drainage, and loosens soil. Core aerators are the preferred type of lawn aerators. They remove plugs of soil called cores, breaking up thatch and improving soil structure. The cores are left on top of the turf and slowly break down with rain, mowing, and traffic on the turf. And a tip, aerate cool season grasses in early fall and warm season grasses in spring. Number 9, attack weeds. Grading a healthy, lush lawn is the best way to eradicate weeds without chemical herbicides. Focus on mowing at the proper height, aerating as needed, and adding fertilizer to provide essential nutrients. Smaller weeds are usually shaded out when your lawn is in top shape. If your yard is plagued with larger weeds, use weeding tools to pull them up from the root. If you must use a weed killer, follow the label instructions carefully and target just the weeds you want to kill rather than treating your entire lawn. Number 10, apply a top dressing. Top dressing involves applying a thin layer of soil or compost to your existing turf. The process improves growing conditions by reducing thatch, increasing the amount of organic matter in the soil, smoothing bumps in the lawn, and lessening the need for fertilizer. After you dethatch and aerate your lawn, spread a quarter to a half inch layer of high quality soil over the entire yard, especially in problem areas where grass is thinning. Work the top dressing into the soil by raking it in. Number 11, remove fallen leaves. Remove fallen leaves by raking or mulching them with a mower before they mat and smother your grass. A mulching mower works well to shred small amounts of leaves and returns the shredded organic matter to the soil, much like top dressing. Stay on top of mulching fallen leaves by running over the lawn with a mulching mower every few days. If there are too many fallen leaves for mowing to be feasible, rake them off the lawn and compost them, or rake them into your garden to join the Leave the Leaves movement. Finally, number 12, drain irrigation lines. Completely drain your lawn's irrigation system before freezing weather arrives. Empty the system with compressed air. Just be sure not to exceed 50 psi of air pressure if you use an air compressor, or use drain valves. For best results, shut off the water to the system and drain each zone separately. Don't forget to drain the main supply line from the house as well. Now here are some frequently asked questions. When is the best time to fertilize a lawn during fall? Apply fertilizer to cool season lawns anywhere between September and November. Homeowners in the north will want to fertilize toward the beginning of fall before temperatures drop too low. Should I seed my lawn before I fertilize in the fall? If you're working with an existing lawn rather than a new one, you should lay seed 4 to 8 weeks before you apply fertilizer. This allows the grass seed to sprout and benefit from the nutrients in the fertilizer. Here's a column that appeared recently in the Arizona Republic, "Build a Stepping Stone Pathway That Will Last," by Steve Beam. Natural stone paths look good in almost any landscape. They never go out of style like so many human-made paver materials. Like most things made of stone, they will stand the test of time if they're built carefully. Stone construction is one of the most satisfying home improvement projects you can do for that exact reason. Stonemasons are generally a happy and satisfied group because they build things that last, and no two projects are exactly alike. We often see stone paving and stepping stones that have sunk into the ground, sometimes so much that they become buried. Settling can make the stones uneven and hazardous to walk on, and can cause dirt and grass clippings to pile up on them. Another common problem with stepping stones is that they aren't hard enough. The wrong type of rock was used. Stones that are laid on the ground will absorb water if they're too porous, so winter freeze-thaw will eventually crumble them to bits. Home handymen can build pathways with stone. However, there are some common pitfalls to avoid. Backaches, crushed fingers, and even hernias are real hazards. You need to be aware of your own limitations. Having a helper is a good idea, but handling stones is a bit like dancing. Your partner must work closely with you, or there can be bumps and bruises or worse injuries if you're not extremely careful. Respect rocks. They can hurt you badly in a careless moment. Well, that sounds like good advice. And here's an article that appeared recently in the December issue of Arizona Highways magazine. It's called Planty. Studies have shown that interaction with indoor plants can reduce psychological or physiological stress. It's something customers experience almost immediately when they walk into Chelsea Thomas's lovely space, by Amima Ahmed. Chelsea Thomas calls Planty her COVID project. As a professional backpacking guide, she found herself with a lot of free time when Grand Canyon National Park closed during the pandemic. That, combined with the increasing popularity of houseplants during that time, made it a perfect opportunity for Thomas to embark on a new journey. "I had a vision for something that was uniquely houseplants and related items," she recalls. "I did a couple of pop-up sales in front of a friend's boutique, and those were wildly successful." Thomas operated as a home-based business for a few months, but soon realized that the demand for houseplants was higher than she'd expected. That led her to expand to a brick-and-mortar location in downtown Flagstaff. "Working with indoor plants, though, is nothing new to Thomas. She says she's had about 250 houseplants at the beginning of 2020 and has always been interested in gardening and learning about plants. I love the unique variety of houseplants and all the different care methods," she says. "I had no professional training. I just seem to have a knack for indoor plants. Today, that knack has become a thriving, hands-on plant business. Every 2 weeks, Thomas takes a trip to California to select the plants she sells at Planty. Being in the greenhouse, seeing all the different varieties and all the different plants available, it's just really wonderful," she says. "I've had so many people tell me that Planty is the coolest plant shop they've been in, and I think it goes hand in hand with me hand-selecting the plants." Rachel Lazader, a Planty customer from its inception, says walking into the store spurs an immediate feeling of calm and relaxation. "You notice all the amazing plants, local artwork, jewelry, stickers, and ceramics," she says. "There are gorgeous pots in all different colors and sizes, cool apparel, soil, trellises, hangers, and everything you need to have happy plants." Lazader also appreciates the highly knowledgeable staff at Planty. "They're friendly and excited to share their expertise," she says. "I always learn something new." Taking care of houseplants can be intimidating, but at Planty, the goal is to help anyone gain the knowledge to own a plant. "Even if you kill every plant, we will help you stop doing that," Thomas says. "It's a few simple things that you're doing that are causing an issue, and just by learning about it, you can easily fix the problem." Thomas says the main problems people encounter with houseplants are under or overwatering and not providing adequate light. "It's really up to the plant holder how much effort you want to put into it," she adds. "I would say the biggest learning curve is truly understanding what bright light means to a plant and how a plant's root system works." According to Thomas, a good starting plant for beginners is a golden pothos. "It is the quintessential houseplant," she says. "This plant is so easy, so adaptable, it can live almost anywhere." Thomas is surrounded by plants at work and at home, and she emphasizes their benefits. "It just brightens up your space," she says. "It's alive, it gives you purpose. There are so many people who sit at home or at a desk for 8 to 10 hours a day, so it's kind of a way to bring nature indoors." If you're interested in getting started with houseplants, Thomas encourages you to stop by and learn about taking care of them. She and her team at Planty will have you feeling confident to start your journey as a plant owner. "Our tagline says it all, exceptional houseplants for everyone," she says. "You could literally get a plant, a pot, and the knowledge that you need to keep that plant alive just by coming to the shop." Planty is located at 112 Historic Route 66, Suite 106. In Flagstaff, the number to call if you're interested is 928-440-4264. Go to plantyflagstaff.com, and Planty is P-L-A-N-T-A-E, flagstaff.com. Also from the Arizona Republic, Apple Orchard. "This is a hidden gem for fall," by Michael Salerno. The rugged desert landscape surrounding Wilcox, about 200 miles southeast of central Phoenix, is where you're more likely to find cactus and agaves than an orchard where you can pick your own apples. That's what makes the presence of Apple Annie's, a family farm amid the backdrop of the Chiricahua Mountains, a beloved hidden gem for Arizonans who enjoy celebrating the change of season with fall activities like apple and pumpkin picking and corn maze adventures. Apple Annie's, which opened in 1986 when the apple trees began bearing fruit, consists of two different sections: the orchard, where apples grow and people can pick their own or buy apples already picked, and the farm, where pumpkin picking and the corn maze are and farmers grow vegetables and sunflowers. Apple Annie's also has a country store off of Interstate 10 at Exit 340 in a building that once housed Stout's Cider Mill, a bygone Wilcox landmark. As far as I know, we're the only one that does all of them. Apples, pumpkins, and corn mazes in Arizona, said Mandy Kirkendall, one of the two children of the farm's founding couple. Her official title is Director of Fun. It feels like fall, and you get to experience a day out on the farm. So what is the history of Apple Annie's? Apple Annie's is named for the orchard's co-founder, Ann Holcomb. She and her husband, John, were originally Phoenix residents, but settled in Wilcox after John's job transferred him to the Cochise County City. The Holcombs learned there was a market for growing apples commercially in the Sulphur Springs Valley region. They planted 6,000 apple trees along 30 acres of their land, Kirkendall said. But the commercial apple market had suffered it by the time the Holcombs trees started producing fruit, she said. So they decided to shift to a U-pick model and open to the public. From the beginning, it took the entire Holcomb family to keep Apple Annie's running. Ann and John, their children Matt and Mandy Kirkendall, and John's father Don were also involved in various roles. When Apple Annie's opened in 1986, John oversaw the apple growing operation and made apple cider, while Ann and 8-year-old Matt baked apple pies and apple bread together. Kirkendall, now 44, was 6 when Apple Annie's opened. In the farm's early days, she served as sales clerk. Today, Apple Annie's remains a family operation with Kirkendall, her brother Matt, and their spouses involved in various tasks. Kirkendall said her parents plan to retire and let she and Matt Holcomb take over. When is apple season in Arizona? Arizona's apple growing season lasts from August to October, with different seasons for different varieties of apples. Kirkendall said Apple Annie's grows 12 types of apples. Gala, harvested in August. Fuji, harvested August to September. Jonathan, harvested mid-August to mid-September. Golden Delicious, harvested late August to September. Red Delicious, harvested late August to September. Braeburn, harvested late August to September. Scarlet Spur, harvested late August to September. Cameo, harvested late August to September. Rome Beauty, harvested early to mid-September. Granny Smith, harvested mid-September to October. Snap, harvested in October. Pink Lady, harvested mid to late October. The 4,300-foot elevation in Wilcox is a favorable environment for growing apples, Kirkendall said. Apple trees can't survive low deserts like Phoenix or Tucson, but can be grown in high deserts with higher elevations. Arizona-grown apples are uncommon, but sweeter. Apples aren't commonly associated with Arizona. Washington State by far has the most apple orchards, representing 2,335 farms out of 27,463 apple-producing farms nationwide, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture's 2022 Census of Agriculture. In Arizona, 148 farms grow apples, according to the USDA Census. But the apples that do grow in Arizona tend to be sweeter than apples grown in other states because of the amount of sunshine the trees and fruit receive, according to Julie Murphy, Outreach Director for the Arizona Farm Bureau. For instance, Arizona-grown Granny Smith apples, a variety known for its light green color and tart taste, are less sour and more sweet than Granny Smith apples from other states, Murphy said. While Apple Annie's is one of the best-known apple farms in Arizona, it's not the only one. Other places where apples are grown in Arizona include Fenway Park Orchards in Morristown, just west of the Vulture Mountains near Wickenburg. Farmers grow two types of apples suited to Arizona's desert climate, the Anna and the Golden Dorset, which are harvested in June and July. The orchard's 2024 season is over. Slide Rock State Park near Sedona lies on the former Pendley Homestead, a historic apple orchard in Oak Creek Canyon. Arizona State Parks and Trails maintains about 300 apple trees on the park grounds, and apple picking is available depending on the harvest. There is no apple picking for the 2024 season because the trees did not produce enough fruit, according to park staff. Howard's Orchard in Catalina, about 20 miles north of Tucson. At least 7 types of apples, as well as peaches and pears, are grown at the orchard. It is open for the 2024 season. Apple picking in Apple Annie's. Apple Annie's is open for picking through the end of the season on October 31st. Picking is open from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. daily, and no reservations are required, Kirkendall said. Appelanis frequently posts updates on the picking season and what's available on his Facebook page. Besides apples, visitors can also pick peaches, pears, and plums at the orchard. There's also a produce and pumpkin section of the farm, which is separate from the orchard, where people can pick pumpkins and seasonal vegetables. Sunflower season recently began at this section of the farm. There's no admission fee to visit Appelanis. People only pay for what they pick. It costs $2.09 per pound for you pick apples and $2.59 per pound for apples that are already picked. Now here are the details. Appelanis Orchard, located at 2081 West Hardy Road in Wilcox. Appelanis Produce and Pumpkins, 6405 West Williams Road in Wilcox. The number to call if you'd like to know more is 520-384-2084 or go to the web to appelanis.com. And those of you who listen to this show on a regular basis know we feature stories each week from the terrific book called Chicken Soup for the Gardener's Soul. This story is called A Couple of Cacti. It was written by Kelly E. Reno. And there's a quote here from Aeneas Nin. Adolescence is like cactus. A couple of cacti. On a sweltering afternoon, my mother came home from grocery shopping. She stumbled through the door with several paper sacks in one hand and a small brown paper bag in the other. "Help with these," she called. Being a rebellious 16-year-old, I slowly sauntered over to her rescue and took the smallest bag from her. "Be careful with that," she warned. "What's in it?" I asked with mild curiosity. Mother set down the groceries and beamed proudly. They had a closeout sale on some cacti. Poor, pathetic little things. I thought I might try to nurse this one back to health. I watched as she slowly extracted a sickly, fuzzy cactus from the paper bag and set it down gently on the kitchen counter. I burst out laughing at the fuzzy nub of a plant. "Mom, it looks like Charlie Brown's Christmas tree. I hope you kept your receipt." Mother just rolled her eyes at me and carefully set the cactus by the sun window, cooing softly to the ridiculous thing. By the second week, the fuzzy little cactus had perked up just a little. I didn't pay much attention to it. High school had started, and I was busy with classes and my budding social life. Boys were starting to ask me out on dates, and I was absorbed in a thrilling but often confusing new world. One day on my way out to school, I found a paper bag sitting on the front steps. My heart sank as I read the brief note. It was a gift from a boy who had a crush on me. I hadn't been very nice to him, but didn't know what else to do. I knew I didn't want to go out with him. I took the bag in the kitchen, and to my surprise, there was another tiny cactus inside. This one was green and straight, with lots of prickly spines on it. "Oh, no," I groaned. "Look, Mom, that guy gave me a cactus. How weird." Mother laughed. "Maybe he's trying to tell you something." "Yeah, something," I mumbled. I knew the two of us weren't meant for each other. Mother inspected the cactus carefully. "This is perfect. Now the other cactus will have a friend." "Like whatever, Mom," I said, mustering up as much sarcasm as I could. I left for school. Mother fussed with the spiny thing and set it next to the other one in the kitchen window. A couple of months later, I was eating a piece of toast in the kitchen one morning. I glanced at the cacti and noticed that they'd both started bending toward each other like two green bananas. I laughed because they looked sort of happy. Through the winter, Mother and I watched these two cacti growing closer and closer to each other. They were both bending dramatically and had nearly formed a U-shape. I was a typical teenager, and sometimes our household got pretty turbulent back then. But those two green cacti were always the subject of pleasant conversations between Mother and me. We'd laugh and joke about the imaginary romance they were having. Mother would be the fuzzy one, and I'd be the spiny one. We'd throw silly one-liners back and forth between the cacti. I'd say things like, "Hey, baby, what's a nice girl like you doing in a pot like that?" Mother would answer, "Hey, keep your stickers to yourself, young fellow." Well, one morning that spring, I went into the kitchen and something truly amazing caught my eye. My spiny cactus had grown a hot pink flower on the top of its head, closing the gap between the two cacti and completing the union between them. Tears came to my eyes. I realized in that special moment that these two cacti had bonded in their own special way. I ran upstairs to get Mother. We both stood there staring at those cacti as big, soggy tears ran down our cheeks. Later that day, Mother and I went to the garden center. After much discussion, we settled on a beautiful pot, big enough for both of them. Without disturbing the cacti's delicate union, we carefully transferred them into their new pot. We were so proud and happy for them. They were in love. I survived high school and soon after graduating moved away to the city and started my own life. Mother kept the two cacti and I would always ask how they were doing when I called. "They're still together," she'd tell me. I felt a sense of security knowing that our little green couple was happy and healthy. One day Mother called to inform me that the fuzzy one had died. "I did everything I could," she told me, "but I just couldn't revive her." Fighting back tears, I said, "That's okay, Mom. You're the one who saved her 10 years ago, remember? Besides, she had a long, happy life, and she experienced true love." The spiny one became ill just months later and passed away. I cried a little when I heard the news. And then I laughed, remembering the happy times Mother and I had enjoyed, watching our spiky sweethearts reach out to each other in our kitchen window. They had helped us keep our hearts connected, too, during my own prickly years. That's called A Couple of Cacti, written by Kelly E. Reno, one of the many stories of make-up chicken soup for the gardener's soul. And that's the Green Thumb Show for this week. For Sun Sounds Radio, I'm Lee Murray, your reader. Thanks for joining us. Have a great week. Be safe and healthy. And we'll be talking with you soon.